Yo, what's up? Welcome to the OKB's podcast, episode 32. I'm one of your hosts, Blessing Adeoye. Joining me this week is Ian Prichel. What's up, Ian?
What's up, Bless? How are you, man?
I'm decent, man. I'm kind of sick. If you're listening, you can maybe hear it in my voice a little bit. I'm not like full-blown sick. I'm just like half-blown sick. And so I'm going to try and keep a lot of energy since this is like a special episode. You know, it's a Zelda episode. This is the first episode since Zelda release. And so I'm going to try
to... Speaking of Zelda, I have a question for you.
What up?
So in Zelda Breath of the Wild, you can cook up food to give yourself power-ups. So with the last meal you ate, what power-up would that meal have?
Oh, geez. Okay, well, the last meal I ate was a pork belly sandwich. It's a Hawaiian dish.
Ooh.
I don't know. It'll have to be something that involves like sweating a lot.
Like maybe it's if you eat this, then you go to a cold area in the map. Oh, it's like cold resistant. Yeah.
Maybe, but it wasn't spicy though. It was just like, it just felt like unhealthy. It was really good. Mm. I think it would, no, it wouldn't increase my stamina because that wouldn't make sense. If anything, it would lower my stamina. Can it be a defect? Can the defect be like my stamina is lowered and I get drowsy?
Or like what if itis? or like what if an enemy tries to hit you? You'll be heavier, so you can deflect the hit easier.
Oh, that's actually pretty good. Why aren't you in like game design, dude?
I don't know. It's a good question. I in college when I was bored, I would like write up these like I would type up these really long game design documents. Fun fact about me. What was my last meal?
Yeah. What would your last meal be if you're like on death row?
If I was on death row? Yeah. Oh. Wow, that's a hard one. I would say, I mean, this is like really corny, but like, I mean, I live in Japan and I love Japanese food, so it would probably be like really, really, really nice sushi or like a really good bowl of ramen, I think.
Huh.
Wait, but you're going to ask me about... You're gonna ask me about game design before you're like mid question and I cut you off.
No, it's fine because now I'm into the sushi thing. Do you think sushi would give more stamina?
Do you think sushi would give you? I mean, sushi, the stuff that I eat is just the rice ball and then the fish over the top of it. So I mean, literally all you're eating is a unprocessed grain and then fish, which has like omega-3s and stuff, and it's like super healthy for you.
I mean, I'm not talking about in real life. I'm talking about
in the game. Sorry,
in Zelda, would it give you more stamina in the game? Would you want to like finish climbing a rock wall?
No. Maybe no.
I feel like it'd be one of those foods.
I think it would like help you in underwater, like in an underwater level. Because the thing is, like with meat is like really heavy, obviously, and that would like what you just add that like weighs you down, right? And that's like why when an enemy hits you, you don't get knocked over. That's like your food's ability. Mm. But like with fish, like it's super light. So I feel like it could give you health, but it wouldn't, it would make you like smooth, like I guess like swim more smoothly in the water because you're not bogged down by food. So you're like, you have energy, you have stamina, but you aren't bogged down.
Yeah.
You swim faster. Maybe increased stamina in water. Like maybe when you eat it on land, you get like a quarter of your bar, and then if you eat it in the water, you get like half or 75% of your bar.
That's pretty, dude. You should like get into like some kind of, I don't know, independent game design or something.
I think I have roughly 80 pages of like design documents. Actually, speaking of which, I think this game would be perfect for you. And this is going to be on a random tangent, but so I had this idea a long time ago for a fighting game that is half fighting game, half like rhythm game, like Guitar Hero-esque.
We talked about this on our.
I know, episode. But still, but still, it's my favorite idea ever. And then I also had an idea that was a combination of like Summer Camp and Mega Man.
Huh.
Yeah.
Mega Camp? Summerman?
Summerman? That's not that bad, actually. The idea for me, I like Summerman. the idea was you're this kid that goes to the summer camp, and it turns out that the summer camp is on a like a graveyard, like a grave site, like an Indian burial ground sort of situation where there's like these natives, like not native spirits, but like there's spirits like possessing people, and the spirits want you to get off the land. So what happened is the spirits inhabited the bodies of four of your senior camp members and then one of the camp counselors. And essentially what you do is you don't have powers. You have like a slingshot and you have a grappling hook, I think, from what I remember. And then every time you defeat a camper, you gain like the stone, and the stone has the spirit that was possessing them trapped inside that gives you a new power. Like, for example, the first boss is like the best swimmer in the camp. And you fight him at the camp lake. And he can like summon these like sharks, but they're not real sharks. They're sharks made of water that attack you. And when you get his power, you can walk on top of the water and get to new areas in the camp. Like, you can cross the lake and then get to the other side of the camp.
You're a nerd. The OKB's podcast is a gaming and nerd culture centric show where a couple of friends come together and talk. Oh my God, I did it again. Okay, where a couple of friends come together and talk about what's going on in our world. I'm changing the description now. Now I have to change it, or else it's going to happen every episode. We are the official podcast of OKBeast.com. If you like the show, remember to subscribe to us on your streaming service of choice. Visit OKBeast.com and follow at OKBeast now on Twitter. Now, Ian, respond. Ian.
I hate you.
He's giving the middle finger.
I hate you.
Ian, I need you to do me a favor.
What? What's up?
Can you talk for 60 seconds while I plug in my Ethernet cord to my computer? Because the syncing from your lips to what you're saying is so far off that, like, I feel like I'm watching, like, a dubbed Japanese film right now. Or, no, Chinese film. Like, a dubbed, like, you know how, like, Jackie Chan made, like, those old films and, like, he would say something and then, like, 5 minutes later it would come out in English? That's what's happening right now. And so,
I can talk for 60 seconds.
Describe to me, I don't know, something in Japan. What's something cool about Japan that people should know out there?
Okay, everyone. So now you are here for Ian's Japan Minute. So I think one of the coolest things about Japan, one of the things that I like the most, is, at least right now in the springtime, we have something called hanami. And hanami is it's a picnic that you have. But the reason why the picnic exists is because there are cherry blossoms. Now, once every year, in the Tokyo and greater Japan area, there are cherry blossoms. And I think they're like these beautiful pink and white flowers that bloom during the springtime. And so what people do is they have a hanami party where everyone goes to the park and they all have beers and they have like snacks and food and stuff. And you just sit down and you just watch the trees and you just look at the trees and how beautiful they are. And I think that's a really cool thing to do, because in America, I feel like I didn't appreciate nature as much. But now, because of these, like, certain events in Japan, I definitely am appreciative of nature and the beautiful blossoms that happen once per year. And that has been your Japan Minute.
Dude, we should do that, like, every show. Like, every show I should just leave and let you give a Japan Minute. Because I came in at the end of that, and that sounded beautiful. And so that was amazing. Well, let's get into it, since this week has been a pretty, like, major week for games. So, Ian, I'll let you start. What have you been up to this week?
So the two things that I've been doing, one, I guess I'll start with the, like, I guess lesser connected thing, just because we're going to be talking about the Switch the whole damn episode. So I guess I'll just talk about the first thing. So I don't know if you're really into superhero shows. I know that you like the CW shows, but recently FX started a show called Legion.
I saw the trailer. It looked good.
Yeah. So it is really, really weird. The summary of it is, okay, so there's two parts to this show. The first is the actual comic book origin, and then it's the actual story of the show. So the origin of this is Legion is the son of Professor X, and he is the son of Professor X and I think Moira McTaggart, who is a, like, government worker. She appeared in the past X-Men movies, like X-Men First Class. So if you saw, I forget the name of the actress, but it's the girl that Professor X hooks up with in First Class. So they have a son, and then for some reason, Professor X is like a deadbeat dad where, like, he doesn't know about the son. I think maybe, like, Moira didn't tell him, but it turns out that person is a Omega level mutant. And if you read comics or if you know about comics, Omega level mutants are people who can, like, they're the strongest mutants. Like, people that can, like, manipulate reality or manipulate, like, atomic structure, that can, like, do crazy things on a macro or micro level, those people are omega level mutants. So this guy can like warp reality. He can read your mind. He can pyrokinesis. He can do all these things. But the big kicker is that he has multiple or dissociative identity disorder.
Huh.
So he has multiple personalities, and each power is locked within a personality.
Interesting. That sounds really cool.
Yeah. So that's the origin of the character. He is crazy fucking strong, and he like breaks the conventions of normal characters because he has almost every single power. Yeah, and he has a really weird haircut in the comics too. But this show, Legion, is following a similar, I guess the character is similar, but not in what he can do. So the first episode you're gonna watch if you watch the show is that you follow this character named David, and we're told that he has schizophrenia, but since he's our narrator, it kind of gives us this weird, unreliable narrator. And the show does amazing things visually with like scene transitions and how scenes are played out because he is so unreliable because of the voices he hears, because of the delusions he has, because of these things that he sees and hears. So it's a very interesting show. And I think that if you're into cinematography in any way and into like weird scene transitions and cool storytelling, then I think you should check this show out. Also, it has like the X-Men sort of like pull where there's like superpowers and like there's a government organization trying to chase people down and stuff. There's a conspiracy, and it's really interesting.
Interesting. I want to stop you right there because I just realized I forgot to do announcements.
Announcements. Announce it.
Yeah. I'm going to announce the biggest announcement we have so far is Breath of the Wildin'. Ooh. It's a new Zelda Breath of the Wild podcast. It's a podcast miniseries, meaning it's only going to range for maybe 5 to 6 episodes. If it does like very well, we may go beyond that. Or if it sucks, we may just stop at episode 2. I don't know. But that's the thing that you should totally check out. It's under the OK Beast name. It's featuring Alex Van Aken. And so it's a collaboration effort between OK Beast and Pixel Post Radio. It's super dope. The first episode is out. Just look up Breath of the Wild and check it out on okbeast.com. Also, I was on We the Gamer by Sean Capri. We the Gamer is like it's a gaming podcast. It's basically like every episode they bring on a new guest, and they kind of just talk about them. It's an interview style show, and so check it out. Sean Capri is a really dope dude. He's really cool. We share like similar podcasts that we listen to, and so definitely check out We the Gamer because like it was really fun. He has like an energy about him that's really dope. And so check that out for sure. Also, once again, I mentioned this last week, but I'll mention it again. Sooner or later, we're going to switch the feed of this podcast to a different feed. And so eventually this feed that you're listening to is going to stop updating if you're listening to this on an RSS feed. And so be prepared. I'll make sure to like prompt you. I'll make sure to upload an episode that says like, hey, switch to the new feed because we have a new feed now. But just be prepared. If you stop getting episodes all of a sudden, that's the reason why. And it won't be all of a sudden, but I'll make sure I'll do my best to keep you prompted on that. Also rate us on iTunes, because Zelda is dope and we talk about Zelda, therefore we're dope. All right. You can go ahead. Well, what else have you been up to this weekend?
I mean, I guess this is something that we've both been up to. I've been playing Zelda on my Switch, which came in on Tuesday of this week.
Now, I want to talk about Zelda, but I want to wait because I want to keep the people thirsty for it. And so, and also, ooh, it's thirsty. It's like spoiler alert. It's the only thing I've been up to this week, and so we can just wait. We can just wait till I get
to
it.
Oh no! And then we'll wait, just have real the quick. Whole conversation. There is some other stuff that I've been doing as well.
Yeah.
This is like boring, like personal stuff, I guess. So I've actually like sat down and I've like dedicated myself to learning more Japanese. So I'm learning.
Oh, nice. Bonjour. Yeah,
nope. Close. No? So yep. One more time.
Hola.
Yep. That was it. Totally nice. Japanese. You got it. Sick.
Hello.
No, you're wrong.
Is that English?
Oh, God damn it.
That was English.
I hate you.
Sayonara.
Wait, there you go. That's one. Sayonara. Oh, cool. Hop up nice. Off the plane. Konnichiwa, bitches. That's the one word you can learn if you want. Konnichiwa.
Sick.
That's your word of the day. Konnichiwa.
Konnichiwa.
Yeah, good afternoon, essentially. So, yeah, like, I've been doing this thing where I looked up how, I guess, the problem with learning a language, and if anyone listens that knows multiple languages or has learned languages in later in their life, they'll kind of, like, feel me on this one, is that no matter what, there's never an efficient way to learn. And that's why it takes us fucking, like, 10 years growing up to be, like, semi-efficient in speaking any language, like, when you're growing up, like... And I was, like, looking up all this week, like, oh, what's the best way to learn a language? Like, what's the best way to learn Japanese? Because Japanese is, like, one of the hardest languages to learn. Like, Japanese and Mandarin Chinese are, like, one of the hardest ones just because of the kanji. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if you know anything about – do you know anything about kanji at all or no?
I know kanji is what you write on paper.
That is true. You do write it on paper.
It's not, like, English letters.
Nope,
they're
not
like
English
the things
letters.
You see in like the top right corner of Yu-Gi-Oh cards, right? Or left, I don't know. I can't remember which corner. There's a corner of Yu-Gi-Oh cards where like it says the type of card.
I'm going to look this up right now. I don't know if you're lying or not.
I'm being dead serious.
I feel like
you look up a Yu-Gi-Oh card. Like a real Yu-Gi-Oh card, not like the ones they have in the TV show.
Oh,
where
shit.
Those are definitely
That's a real kanji that I know. Okay, that's pretty cool. All right, thanks.
Yeah.
Blessing.
See? There you go. Yeah, okay. Now you can just look up all the different Yu-Gi-Oh cards. There's only a limited amount because it's only for like the kind of type of card it is, but there you go. The more you know.
Da-na-na, the more you know.
Da-na-na. Yeah, so that's kanji.
But yeah, so pretty much what kanji is it is a pictograph system that is shared by the Chinese and Japanese people. And essentially, it's imagine if we took our letter, our word system, and then instead of having the alphabet, we had a character, a pictograph character for almost every word.
Hmm.
So, for example, if you learn the alphabet, you can read a simple book, right? Like, you can read a children's book, right? So, but in Japanese, guess how many characters high schoolers know?
Wait, guess how many characters they know?
Like characters, like how many, like we call them characters,
like
every, like kanji.
Are we talking about DBZ or are we talking about Yu Yu Hakusho?
No. Shut up.
Well, the Americans know 26, and so I'll give the Japanese 30.
Nope.
I'm kidding. It's probably a lot, right? Like 100 or something?
10,000.
Oh, I was close.
100 is not close to 10,000. I don't
well,
know if you know this.
100 is think about how many numbers there are in the world, and then think about how close 100 is to 10,000.
I hate you. But yeah, so it's been a pretty crazy task to try and learn these, but I'm in the process of learning 25 per day. So I'm on day 4 right now, so I've already learned 75. So
nice. Is it pretty difficult?
I thought it was going to be, but I have a book that I bought a while back before I came to Japan, and it's honestly a really useful tool. Like the way they have you memorizing things is like you essentially break down really difficult kanji into its most simple forms, and then you can learn it piece by piece. And when you learn it piece by piece, it becomes pretty simple.
Interesting.
Like for example, the kanji for bright has two kanji inside of it, and the first character is sun, the second character is moon. So sun and moon are the two brightest things in the sky. Sun and moon. Now you know bright.
It makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nice. What else have you been up to?
I've been trying. Yeah. Like I've been. Yeah. So again, this is all like personal stuff, but like I've been doing this new thing called intermittent fasting. Have you heard of this or no?
I know what fasting is. I don't know what intermittent fasting is.
So intermittent fasting is when you only eat between the hours of 2 p.m. and 10 p.m.
Okay.
So, for example, like, and the reason why I'm doing this is because I've heard about this technique before, and I've like known people who do this as well. But apparently, there's like the cells inside of your stomach, like your stomach wall. Mm-hmm. Again, this is all like an article that I read like a long time ago, so please forgive me if I have things wrong. But essentially, the cells in your stomach, like when you're eating multiple, like 3 meals a day, like without a long break, for example, your stomach isn't fully digesting everything, and it doesn't allow the cells in your stomach and in your stomach lining to heal all the way so they can continue to do their job. So essentially when you do intermittent fasting, it allows your body to fully digest, to kind of like clear everything out, and then to allow your cells to kind of heal as best they can. And that's kind of what I'm trying to do.
Nice. So it's like it's a health thing.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to be a little bit healthier, you know, being gotcha. Like when you're single, like before when I was single, I had a very defeatist attitude. So I was like, oh, like, fuck it. Who cares? Like, I'm single. It doesn't matter. I'll do whatever I want. I'll eat whatever I want. But now that I mm-hmm. have my girlfriend, I'm trying to be a little bit healthier because like, oh, if I die tomorrow, that would suck. So.
Nice. Usually when I think of fasting, I think of it in like a religious sense. And so I was expecting it to be like a religious or like spiritual thing. And so
I mean, I've done the religious version. The Jewish people have a fasting holiday as well.
Yeah, yeah. And so like, yeah. Huh, that's interesting. I've heard of of course there's different diets and stuff people do. So I never heard it referred to as like fasting. And so I was like I was curious. Mm. That's pretty cool though.
Yeah. Do you know Terry Crews, by the way? Terry Crews does this as well.
Does he? Yeah, Terry Crews is the homie. Like, not literally, like, he's not my homie, but, like, he's the homie.
I was like, damn it, black people do know, every black person does know each other.
All of us know, Terry Crews is just staring into my window right now, like, what's up, homie?
He's like, what are you doing?
What's up, Terry Crews? Yeah. Starts to yell at me for no reason, makes me do push-ups. He plays Overwatch. He's trying to
to be Doomfist.
Roll for Doomfist. Yeah. Which I think would be, that would be the dopest thing, and I'll play Doomfist, like, nonstop.
100%,
Terry Crews did the voice for him. And if they would finally put him in the game.
Yeah, right. Well, I think it might be. Someone made a joke on a podcast that I listened to this week is that they had to put out three female characters because Doomfist will be so hyper male that it will be 300% male. They had to put 100% of female three times just to equate to Doomfist.
Just to equate to how like manly Doomfist is. That's hilarious. Doomfist looks dope, and I'm usually not like a macho like I hate that kind of thing, but.
If it's the Old Spice guy, fuck yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, ready? What if they release a trailer for Doomfist and it's not actually a person, it's just the gauntlet. The gauntlet has AI in it and it doesn't need a human being counterpart. It's the floating gauntlet.
You just fly, it's just like a floating fist flying around.
It's like, what are you doing? And then just like has Terry Crews's like voice, but just like talks kind of like a sock puppet like this, like, what are you doing, get out of my face, and then like flies off somewhere.
That would actually kill me. That would actually be
crap.
The most hilarious thing I've
seen. This is why I should be working at Blizzard, because of things like this is why I should be doing that.
This is why you need to be a game developer. Anything else you've been up to this week?
No, that's it.
All you want to talk about, Iron Fist being born?
Oh yeah, that's what I want to talk about. So in the spirit of what we were talking about last week, about like diversity and inclusion and stuff like that. So Iron Fist reviews of the first six episodes have come out and they're kind of like meh. But earlier when they were doing casting for Iron Fist, people were saying like, oh, this is the perfect time to have Iron Fist be Asian. You know, we already have one white guy with Daredevil. You know, we have Jessica Jones. We have Luke Cage, who is African-American or black. And then what a perfect inclusion that would be to have an Asian representation, because the Hand and like the people they fight, the bad guys, are all Asian. So, you know, why not? So there's a whole big controversy over it. And then they end up picking a white guy. And one of my favorite comic book creators and anime makers, do you know LaShawn Thomas?
No.
So LaShawn Thomas worked on a very popular anime, and that is The Boondocks.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he is the creator of The Boondocks.
Oh, yeah. I'm familiar with the work.
Yeah. He's awesome. He's a great creator. Yeah. I was scrolling through my timeline the other day, and LaShawn Thomas posts, and he like is very not controversial. He's very open about his opinions on race and like and how that's important to the medium and stuff like that, especially with anime. Like one of his favorite shows besides Boondocks is Cowboy Bebop. And you can actually see a lot of Cowboy Bebop inspiration in the animation of The Boondocks. Like I think one fight is almost scene for scene the same as a Cowboy Bebop fight. One of the fights that I think Riley has, I think. I'm not sure.
Riley and Huey fight each other all the time.
Yeah, yeah. So this tweet from LaShawn Thomas says, The inherent issue with Marvel's Iron Fist, cast an Asian actor and risk being racist, or cast a white actor and risk being racist? # source material. And then he continues on, like, one of the original, like, issues of Iron Fist and gives it context. And I think that he's got a point, honestly. Because, for example, say they cast an Asian actor and then they're like, oh, well, this is like super hammy and super Asian. You know, this is racist. And then they get called out for that. But then they're like, OK, we'll do the source material, because then we can say it's the source material. But then people call them racist for not for not casting an Asian actor, even though it's primarily like the source material is from another era where, let's be frank, shit, it was racist. Iron Fist does have weird racist roots. Like, you know, it was made so in the 60s, in the 70s, probably maybe even the 50s. So like, yeah, this has strange and like racially bound roots, you know? So like, it's a lose-lose situation. And it sucks because I think Iron Fist is one of the cooler characters, like in that universe, because of the Asian ties or whatever. And as an Asian, as a white guy in an Asian country, I was like, oh, cool. Finally, like you know, maybe I can like find a weird connection to this stuff. But yeah, I don't know. I wanted to know your thoughts on this sort of situation and if you knew anything about it.
I actually didn't know anything about the situation. I think it's a weird situation, though. I mean, off the bat, I would think it was like it's kind of a, like a non-issue kind of thing of like I'd never had any expectation that Iron Fist was going to be Asian because like he's white in the comics, right?
Yeah, the source material said he's white.
Yeah, and like I mean, I've had this conversation before, and I think I've had it on this podcast that like, you know, back when they announced Zendaya for Spider-Man.
For Mary Jane,
And I don't know if it's been confirmed that she's playing Mary Jane. I think
I'm like 90% sure. Although, yeah, but, although to be honest, did you see Spider-Man the animated cartoon, the most recent one?
No.
I think that there's a character called White Tigress, and she's also a superhero, and she's like a plant by S.H.I.E.L.D. to look after Peter Parker in the high school. And I would love to have Zendaya be a superhero, heroine, like White Tigress.
Yeah, that'd be cool. The reason I bring up Zendaya is because, like, people were speculating that she's going to play Mary Jane. Mm-hmm. And Mary Jane is, like, historically white and stuff. Mm-hmm. And my argument for people that were, like, so vehemently against it was that, like, there's a history, like, behind, like, the time Spider-Man was originally created and the context then versus the context now. Like, the context, like if I look up the year Spider-Man was created, it was probably a racist time because any time before this year. But
I mean, even now is a racist time. But, like, before with, like, media, it was more inherent. And, like, the thing is, so here was my argument for it, right? Is that pretty much if their race is not a defining characteristic of them, then I think that it's cool to change it. So, for example, like, if they made Black Panther a white guy, or if they made Black Panther a Hispanic guy, that'd be kind of weird. I don't know how I'd feel about it.
He's an African prince,
It makes sense. Maybe if he was a South African prince or something, I don't know. Like, that doesn't make any sense either, though. Like,
That's the same kind of direction I go at it from, is, like people, the argument comes up of, like, If they could make Daredevil black, Daredevil's not black, but like if they did make Daredevil black, or if they're thinking about it, they're like,
that'd be cool.
If we made Luke Cage white, people would get mad, and
because like, Luke Cage is written about the African American struggle.
Yeah, that's a central. It's a central character to the character, right? That they're that they're black and they're going through like these specific issues in like their black community, and the reason why it's usually a problem, I think the thing that's lost on most people is the fact that, like, most characters that are minorities are written around stories that specifically have to do
with oppression,
how they identify themselves, or, like, kind of either, oppression or something that has to do with their culture, right? So, like, there are Asian characters in comics or Asian superheroes. Most of their stories have to do with, like, samurais or, like, ninjas or, like, or, like, some kind of thing that has to do with specifically being Asian.
Yeah.
Which is, like, I mean, I think there's a discussion to be had there of like, is that a good thing or is that a bad thing, right? Mm-hmm. But also like for many people that may look up to these characters, like right, like if there's an Asian superhero and people look up to this Asian superhero,
Do you know the new Hulk, by the way? The new Hulk is Asian.
I don't even know this new Hulk.
Yeah, like it's
a
like
new Hulk cartoon or comic. Or
no, like comic. Yeah, the new comic. He's an Asian scientist.
Yeah,
I think he's a young. I think he's young too. He's like a young Asian scientist does a similar like formula.
Yeah, but like if like if all of a sudden you take that like Asian character that many Asian people look up to and turn them into a different race, it then becomes an issue. Like that's I think that's completely something different than like a random like character, right? Like Spider-Man or something being turned into like a black character, because like people don't look up to Spider-Man because of his race. People look up to Spider-Man just because he's a character. Because
he's a teenager. No, like, more often than not, I feel like people, like, look up to Spider-Man because he, like, they're in high school, same as him.
I look
and, like,
up to Spider-Man.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying, though. You look up to him because of who he is as an outcast. That's, like, his primary. Mm-hmm. And that's why Miles Morales also resonated with people as well, is because he still held that, like, outcast feeling, but he also was able to bring in this racial divide and this, like, racial tension into his storyline as well with his uncle went mm-hmm. to jail, I think. And there was, that's, like, a part of the storyline is that his uncle was a supervillain.
Mm-hmm.
From what I remember, it's been a long time since I've read it, but mm-hmm. like the primary defining characteristic of Spider-Man is that he's an outcast that gets into a bad situation and then allows that situation to help him be a hero and help him learn. And that's his storyline is more about being a teenager and growing and learning and like the pains from growing. It doesn't matter what mm-hmm. race they are as Spider-Man. And I feel like that's the same for Mary Jane. Mary Jane can be any race because literally all Mary Jane is, I mean, sadly enough, from what I've read, is a plot device. Yeah. She's a plot device.
Yeah.
I'm Peter Parker and I want to be with the popular girl, but I can't because I am not confident and I'm not Flash Thompson. But then when I'm Spider-Man, I am confident because that's who I really am. Someone who just wants to help people and be confident and be this person. And that's kind of the dichotomy that Spider-Man brings, is that this thing between, oh, I'm a nerd at high school and people shit on me, but in reality, I'm this amazing hero that sacrifices their time, their life, like their livelihood to help other people and to be a person that is a good person because of what happened to me, you know, takes tragedy and turns it into a positive thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like Mary Jane doesn't matter in the story.
I say that, and I say that all to say that, like, when it comes to Iron Fist, like, I don't have any problem if they want to make him Asian, right? And I don't think people in general should not have a problem if they wanted to make him Asian. But I don't think they should be pressured at all to make him Asian, because I think if you want him to be Asian because it makes sense for the story, like, if, like his, I don't know anything about Iron Fist, but I assume.
Do you want me to tell you what Iron Fist is?
Give me, like, a 20-second version.
It's Batman.
Okay.
It's like Batman and Doctor Strange, where like I think his family was on a expedition. I think either mm-hmm. plane, it was either a plane or something like that, an expedition in the Alps, and then he gets lost from his family and gets stranded, and then these monks from this mythical place pick him up, and then they raise him in this area, and then they raise him to be this like warrior.
Okay.
From the age of ten until something. But the thing is, people are getting pissed at this. People aren't pissed that Doctor Strange is white, and the story is the exact same thing. White man goes mm-hmm. to Asia, becomes the best at sorcery, and comes back and is a superhero.
Yeah.
What
I was gonna say is that like Iron Fist, like I don't think if the sentiment is that like you have Jessica Jones who's a woman, you have Luke Cage who's black, and you have Daredevil who's white, and then like it would be perfect if this guy was Asian. I don't think that's a good argument.
Yeah, I don't agree either
at all. Like that argument is more like if you're OCD, I understand. Like if you have like some kind of
we want one of each race
or something. Yeah, but like as an argument, like people are colorful, right? Like people are all there are different kinds of people. Different people come from different places. There are different sexes of people. People are diverse, of course.
Mm, mm.
You don't always see like groups of friends hanging out with like one black dude, one Asian dude, one girl. Like I don't think that particular argument makes sense. I don't know how prominent that one is. I don't know if that's one of like that's the thing that made people be like,
I think it's just more about it's an Asian centric story, and it would be better to have Asian representation in media at a higher level, especially with the Ghost in the Shell stuff happening as well. Like the Ghost in the Shell stuff mm-hmm. also is kind of like taking away from Asian culture and having a white person be the stand in. But I know tons of Japanese actors and tons of Asian actors. Like Pacific Rim has tons of like Asian actors that are really cool. So I mean, they definitely could have done it. It's just mm-hmm. oh well, there's this guy from Game of Thrones, and the character is also white, so why not? Like, and I don't necessarily fault them for that. I think it would have been cool to have an Asian actor be the lead in a Marvel story, because there hasn't been, right? Like. Every Marvel story doesn't have any Asian people, even on the big or small screen. So it would be great to have more Asian representation for sure, especially in a story that is more Asian centric. But look at that as like a as like a company, think about that, like the message you send when you do that, right? So mm-hmm. so we do Daredevil. Everything is accurate. Every character is how they are in the comics, pretty much. They're the same mm-hmm. race. They look roughly the same. Their suits are the same, right? Then you have Luke Cage. Same thing. Characters are roughly the same as they are in the comics. Then you have Jessica Jones. Again, literally the purple man turns purple at one point in the show. Like things like these shows are touted as being accurate representations of the comics in some way, shape, or form. And then mm-hmm. like, oh, well, you're touching an Asian property, we better change it. Like, what does that send as like a company? They're like, oh, well, like people get mad about race, that we have to change something. You know what I mean? Like I don't know if it sends the right message or if it sends a message that is consistent with what they're trying to do. And I feel like the most important thing that they're trying to do is mm-hmm. is keep everything the same
as they were in the comic, which I respect. Like I do respect that because I think that's probably the easiest way to go about it. Mm. At least for like this specific cinematic universe of like, we're just going to keep everything the way it was in the comic because these are the comics that like people have kind of grown to love. And I respect that decision. I don't think whether or not they made Iron Fist Asian or white, I would feel the same exact way about it because I don't think, I mean, I think it matters in some sense, but ultimately I don't think it matters that much in terms of like in terms of the context around it, right? Like, do you keep the source material or do you mix it up? Like, I don't know. Figure out what works best for you. Go with it. That's kind of how I feel.
Well, I'm saying, like, they're not doing that on the big screen. Why would they feel like they would need to be pressured to do it on the small screen?
Yeah.
Like, why didn't they make Doctor Strange Asian? Tons of Asian doctors. He goes to Shangri-La or whatever. He goes to Asia as well to learn these powers. Why didn't they make him Asian? Mm-hmm. Why didn't they cast Donnie Yen as Doctor Strange? Wait, that would have been fucking cool as hell. What?
Oh yeah, dude, Donnie Yen should be everything. But also like
That would have been really, really cool. What the fuck? They should have done that. Yeah. Fuck.
I had something I was going to say. I forgot what it was. Oh no, what I was going to say is that like I think whatever the writers or the directors, whatever they want to do with this specific series, they should do. Unless they're going to make like everybody just white male, like even Jessica Jones is a white male. Like, unless they're going to do something like that, like I think they should have the freedom. And so like, and that's what I fear actually a lot is that like maybe like if they were thinking about making what's his name Asian, Iron Fist Asian, but then they felt pressure not to because they didn't want that reaction. That's also another fear. Yeah. Because people usually look at it the other way around. My biggest thing is that I want storytellers to be free and be confident if they want to switch things up like that. I assume in this case, they probably don't because they're sticking so hard to the source material, which is okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, like I also want to put that like viewpoint out there because I do think that's an actual thing of like people being like, if we change it, everybody will get mad at us because they think we'll think we're giving in to like, I don't, whatever. But we should talk about Zelda.
Wait, well, before because, you go, I mean, if you think about it, the other people in that show, in the Defenders, like what's his name, Daredevil gets his powers from being blind. That's his defining characteristic. Mm-hmm. But he also learns kung fu or like his fighting style from the same blind man who learned it from the hand. So by the transitive property, he also learned through this Asian method as well. Well, no, I'm saying he learned through this Asian method as well. And mm-hmm. like, does that make Daredevil shitty?
There's the strong Asian presence. I mean, I don't think anybody is like saying it. Are people saying that like it's shitty that like Iron Fist is... I guess probably people are saying that it's shitty that aren't people.
Because like it's like essentially like oh man, white savior. And I do agree to a certain degree.
People are gonna get mad, and what you gotta do is just ignore those people.
You know what they should have done? They should have done a full swap. They should have made Iron Fist black. That would have been cool as fuck. They should have made Jessica Jones Asian. They should have made Daredevil Hispanic, and they should have made whoever the fourth person was. What did I say all four?
I wasn't paying attention. I'm too busy thinking about how mad people are going to be that we're not talking about Zelda yet.
Oh, fuck it. We'll talk about Zelda.
Unless there's anything else you need to talk about.
No, I think that's it. I think.
Cool. Okay. So, as far as what I've been up to this week, I've only been doing one thing, and that's playing Zelda. And once again, for the people out there, this is a Zelda podcast that we have started. It's a mini-series, Breath of the Wild. Check it out on okbeast.com. Ian, let me tell you about Zelda.
Do it.
Unless, do you want to go first or should I go first?
You go first. I was just talking about representation, so why not? Go for it.
All right. Zelda is an amazing game, and I'm sorry that I'm sick, or I would be more energized about it, and I would be, like, more, like, fast-talking and whatever, but Zelda is an incredible game. I've played a lot of it. I don't know how many hours I played of it. I feel like I played maybe 30 hours of it so far. It's the best Zelda I've played.
Mm-hmm.
Before playing this one, my favorite was Twilight Princess, and I still feel like Twilight Princess, the dungeons, I think I prefer it over the dungeons in this game, but everything else in this game, I think they do better. Like, it does exploration better than every other Zelda game. Maybe, like, I think the only, like, opposition it has maybe is, like, the first Legend of Zelda, for what it was doing at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I think the combat's fun. I don't like that there's degradable weapons, but I think it makes sense for what they're trying to do with pacing and that mechanic. I think they just kind of wanted people to... I think they wanted to add in something to have people switch things up a lot. And so
switch things up.
No, like, the story is cool. Like, everything about this game is pretty cool. And, I've kind of gone on, like, two, like, positive rants on this game already. And so I don't want to make this number three, and I don't want to keep repeating myself, but the biggest takeaway I have in this game is that they're doing an open world better than any other open world game. Right, and before playing this game, like, my favorite open world games have always been, like, the Grand Theft Autos. Like, I always thought, like, San Andreas and Grand Theft Auto 5 are two of my favorite open worlds because they're so detailed and they're doing so much and there's so much to do and they're jam packed full of activities and every sign you look at is different. Everything you look at is different. Everything you look at is, like, polished, right? And this game, I feel like, does a similar thing. Mm-hmm. But also, like, I'd have to sit down and marinate on this more, but I think this game does open world better than Grand Theft Auto, and that's hard for me to say because I am, like, a Grand Theft Auto, like, apologist. But the way this world makes you slow down and uncover it slowly and walk around corners and discover something new,
mm-hmm.
like, what feels like every few minutes, like, it feels like it's just hitting you upside the head with new things over and over and over and over again. The way the game does that is expertly done, and it feels more, the world feels way more detailed than it has any right to be for an open world game and for a game that's, like, on a handheld system, right? Like, it hit me on the bus that, like, dude, I'm playing cartoon Zelda, right? I'm playing Miyazaki Zelda. Mm-hmm. Miyazaki, yeah. Or not Zelda. I'm playing Miyazaki Skyrim, what it feels like.
Yeah.
On the bus, right?
And
honestly,
I completely agree. Before the podcast, we were talking, and I was showing you, like, screenshots that I had taken of a certain scene, and the way they're shaded, the way the colors are, it's so vibrant and so, like, natural looking. Like, the color palette is very natural. And, like, the greens are these, like, olive hues, and the blues are these, like, ocean blues. They're not, like, a dark, like, this, the dark blue that I'm wearing right now, which obviously is great to say on an audio podcast. Hey, look at this shirt. Hey, everyone, turn to your right. Look at me. Do you see the shirt that I'm wearing? Yeah, it's a dark blue. Okay, look back at the podcast now. Okay. Yeah, so that blue, it's like a very light, it's just very soft. Like, everything around is, like, this color palette that's, like, soft and inviting. It's fucking beautiful.
It's so good. Then the game is just, like, chill. It is so chill, but it never stops. Like, and that's the thing about this game is that it never stops. There's never been a moment in this game where I'm like, I don't know what I'm gonna do right now, because there's always somewhere you can go. Like, there's always something you can attain. Mm-hmm. You can always look in the distance, see a tower, and be like, I'm gonna go there. Mm-hmm. Or you can look into the distance, see a shrine, and be like, I'm gonna go there. Or you can go into or you can like look in the distance, see a mountain, or you can see, like, a creature. Yesterday I was just chilling, looked down because I'm on a tower. I look down, I see a huge.
Oh shit!
Just
really?
Around.
What?
Yeah, and I'm not gonna say anything else about it because I don't want to spoil it. And I don't think, and I, once you get this game, you know you're gonna see big beasts randomly. Like, I don't think that is a spoiler at all. But you're gonna see, like, random stuff in this game where you're like, where did this even come from? Like, how? And I've said this on two different podcasts. I'll say it again. Like there are games, right? That do open worlds that I'm like angry at. Like, there are developers that make open world games that I get angry at. Like, I get angry at Ubisoft while playing this game. I even get angry at Bethesda while playing this game because they don't make open world games like this. Like, yeah. Bethesda is closer. Like, Ubisoft is like far off from what I want open world games to be, right? Where it is it's all about discovery. It's all about what's next, or what's the next story. And, you know, why can't American developers do characters like this? Like, why can't the characters in American games be as charming?
I can tell you why.
Like the characters in Zelda, why?
Because I think, I mean, I'm not an expert, but I think that from my understanding, so I think American media in general is obsessed with being like super cool and edgy, like, yeah, Batman, I'm this guy, like, I'm very intense, I'm dark. Like, imagine America is trying to always be a Christopher Nolan movie.
Mm-hmm.
And then look at Japan, and then imagine Japan is just trying to have fun.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not afraid to be weird. Like, they're not afraid to have these weird moments. And I feel like weirdness and quirkiness is what makes a good character in a video game, because you're not going to have, like, a long sit-down conversation with a character in Zelda, no. Like, you're going to have some interaction with them, and then you're going to leave. But these weird quirks, these weird silly things they do, that's what's going to be memorable about them. Like, for example, I was walking around near, I think not a village, but near like a little encampment, and I walked up to this guy on his horse, and he's like, "Hello, my name is Shakosh. Also, this is my horse named Shakosh. Is that weird? I don't care." And I was laughing. I was like, wow, that's really funny. And like, that's like weird goofiness I feel like you don't find in games like Horizon or like other games like,
yeah,
like that, other open world games like that, except for maybe GTA. Yeah. GTA has like weird goofiness as well, but I feel like that's one of the reasons why it's so successful, is because it's able to toe the line between goofy and weird and satirical, and then also be the super serious like commentary on America, and also super serious like gameplay.
And I love GTA, and I think now that I think about back in my statement comparing GTA and Zelda, I think GTA is still up there for me. I think that now that I think about it, they do completely different things, right? Because GTA is in like a city where like GTA makes sense for its setting, whereas Zelda for its setting makes perfect sense. Like, I feel like the gameplay complements the setting and the story perfectly. And yeah, like the random moments you have with like the NPCs in this game, like there's an NPC, right, where like you're walking and he stops you, and like he's like, "Hey, I lost my maracas, and can you go like help me out and like get my maracas back from like this enemy camp?" And you help him, and he's like a really cool, like charming character. And I think that's the thing that I keep coming back to, is that they're all, the characters in this game are awesome, and like they have emotion. And you mentioned this last week about how Fallout, like the characters in Fallout, like they have that like eerie, or no, uncanny valley thing going on.
Yeah, and same for what's it called? Same for Horizon.
Yeah. And like, this game feels as big as those games and doesn't have that. Like, this game feels as big as those games, but feels super polished and feels super like it doesn't feel like jaggedy. And you know, people give like Bethesda like the excuse that they're Bethesda, right? They're making like Bethesda games. These games are so huge and there's so many things going on in them that like you just gotta excuse it, because like look at the game they're making. They're making like this grand thing, and I feel like Zelda is this grand thing. And that might be because like they slow you down a lot more than I think you're slowed down in like a Skyrim or a Fallout or a GTA or any of those games. But this world feels huge. Like I have so much of the map that I haven't uncovered. And I don't know, man, it's just a great game. What do you have to say about the game?
It's, I think what I said to you and Alex in our little group chat, I think is a good representation of how I feel about this game. This game, it's not about what the game does that's special. I think it's what the game doesn't do is what's special. So for example, there was a quest, and I hopefully this isn't like spoiler. I'm only a couple of hours in. So I'm in this quest, or I'm in this forest, and I hear this sound playing. And I was like, oh, that must be the soundtrack kicking in. Because when you're walking around, every once in a while, there's like a low piano. Then as I walk closer to it, the sound keeps increasing. And then I realize, oh, wait, there's someone playing an instrument near me. And I look around and I see there's a bird. There's a Birdman playing. It wasn't actually Birdman, but there is a bird person.
Oh, Dude, I totally just saw my first Birdman today.
Oh, really?
Like, randomly, yeah. I tweeted a picture of it.
Oh, yeah, that's the same guy. Like, that's the same guy. Yeah. But he was in a different place in my game. So, yeah, so there's this traveling guy, and he tells me the story about this this legend of a... of in the mouth of the dragon, you'll find your courage. And apparently that's like a page from this multi-page thing that he was talking about. So mm-hmm. I look at the map, I undo my map, and then I look and I see, oh, there's a river that kind of looks like a dragon's mouth. So I run up to the river and I go in the inside of the mouth of this dragon, quote unquote, even though it's a lake that's shaped like a dragon, is a shrine. And the shrine tells me, hey, if you do this, also I had to defeat a bunch of enemies that were super, super hard. There's like a bunch of Lizalfos with like electric arrows. That was literally awful. But anyway, so then I find the temple, and the temple goes, oh, young warrior, if you bring me the scale of Farosh, I will give you a great something. And I'm like, what? Where's that? And like, again, the game isn't like giving me any objective markers. It's just telling me, hey, this area, you'll find this thing. This area, you'll find this thing. And then I ended up trying to look for the scale of Farosh in this place called the Farosh Hills. Couldn't find it. But you know what? That's fine. It was a super cool mm-hmm. quest. Even that beginning part was really, really interesting. And like, there's small moments like that that are really cool. Like that the game allows you to discover yourself and is built in a way to allow you to discover it. Like, there's another time where I was in this little hut, and there's a book. But in front of the book was a poster, and on the poster it had ingredients, and then it had a pie. And I was like, oh, that must be the recipe for pie. I find out later from a friend that he made a pie using that same ingredients. And I was like, oh, snap, they told you the recipe like within like 10 minutes of the game. That's so crazy. And I didn't have mm-hmm. access to those recipe ingredients at all, but I knew that I could make it one day. And it's like these small things that like are not told to you, but like kind of like, it's like your friend nudging you like, hey, man, there's this thing over here if you want to try it out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the world feels lived in, and it feels like it. There's so many little things sprinkled throughout the world that it keeps it like really alive. Like, and I don't know, man. Like, why don't more developers do this? Like you were saying, I ran into a person, and this is like, I think most people playing the game are probably gonna run into this part sooner or later, but it's earlier, and so it's not much. I'm very worried about spoiling this game for people because I want people to go into it like fresh, because it's that kind of game where I'm like, dude, just go play it. Don't even listen to anybody talk about it. Just play it. Unless you listen to Breath of the Wild and then listen to people talk about it. But no, like, there was this one where this lady is like, hey, like, I'm trying to figure out this riddle that has to do with like those three trees on top of those three mountains. And you like the camera like turns to the mountains, and they're like, hey, look at those three trees on top of those three mountains. If you line those mountains up and you go east, or no, if you line those trees up and you go east of them, then apparently you'll find a trial. And I'm like, interesting.
Oh, snap. That's really cool, yeah. Actually.
And it took like, and dude, stuff like that is just sprinkled throughout. One of my favorite parts of this game, or one of my favorite moments that I've had so far playing this game is... I got this side quest from this lady who was like, hey, these bokoblins, which is a great name, and I want to use it in a diss sometime. I want to like tell somebody like, hey, your girl looks like a bokoblin. But like this NPC was like, hey, these bokoblins stole my sheep. Can you go help me out? And so I was like, cool. I found the bokoblins. They're chilling on a beach. Defeated them after a while because I was kind of weak at that moment. Defeated them, did the side quests, but then I was on the beach, right? And I looked to I look far off, and there's just like an island, just like a lonely island. Shout out to Lonely Island, the rap group. there was a lonely island, and it had a shrine on it. And I was like, oh, cool, I'll swim there. And I tried swimming. I realized, oh, I don't have enough stamina to swim there. And then I look up, and I see like this high peak of this hill. I'm like, oh, I'm gonna get there, and I'm gonna float from there all the way down to this island. The thing is, like, the peak was like a 30-minute, like a real life, like 30-minute journey away. And so I'm like, cool, let's do it. I run halfway there. I find a horse randomly, get the horse. I start riding there. I start getting closer and closer and closer and closer. And after like 30 minutes pass, I look up and I see like, I'm like near the peak, and I look up and I see a rainbow, and I'm like, oh, that's kind of nice. And like, but prior to this, it had been like raining and kind of storming, but like it had been clearing up, and so to like see the rainbow in the distance was pretty nice. And so I kept galloping up the hill all the way to this like super high peak right in the game.
Mm-hmm.
And I passed by some Bokoblin camps, and I finally like arrive at the peak, and I look up and there's like a double rainbow, and I was even more like,
"Oh, dude, you mentioned this is dope."
Yeah, I tweet. I made it. I tweeted about it, and I was like, "Dude, this is kind of great." And like, I looked around. It was kind of like a beautiful, like serene moment. And I think serene is like the perfect way to describe this game. It's like it's peaceful and like the most grand way ever. And yeah, I look up and I see like this double rainbow, and also I see that there's like another shrine on top of this peak. And so I got like a 2-for-1 kind of deal because I did this shrine, floated down to the island shrine. I tried to do that shrine. I wasn't like good enough to do that shrine, so I had to come back to it. But I eventually got it. And it was just this moment of, like, I can do anything in this game, because I was like, I'm going to do this thing, I'm going to do this thing, and I was able to actually do it, right? Which is not a thing you can say about many games, is that, like, I'm going to go over there, all the way over there, and I'm going to, you know, do this specific thing, and I was able to do it. I had something else I was going to say about this game. I can't remember what it was. How long have you been playing?
I don't know. It feels like no time has passed, but I know for a fact it's more than 10 hours.
Have you reached Kakariko yet?
No.
Okay. Dang, so you're still kind of early.
I've just been running around. I was telling you before the podcast started that I literally have the starting armor, but then I have a helmet that gives me like 7 defense and electricity. Like, I had this random upgrade from a side quest I did, but like... Mm-hmm. I've barely done anything, it feels like, and yet I've done so many things already, and it's crazy to me.
My few gripes with the game are the controls, and that's more of a gripe with the Switch itself, which I guess we should talk about the Switch. But I'll say my gripes real quick. My gripes are the controls.
Mm-hmm.
You can't remap them, and they're kind of laid out weird. Mm-hmm. The frame rate sucks sometimes, but like I tweeted this yesterday that like Super Mario 3 has bad frame rates at times, and that's like the best game ever made. And so like I kind of excuse it because the frame rate only happens every now and then.
It doesn't take away from my experience at all, really, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, it did for me like in the first hour, but after that, like,
really,
it hasn't really. Yeah, like I think it was right when I like left like the first like cave that you're in. And like coming out to the open area, and then like the frame rate just started dropping for me, and I was like, "Oh, that's kind of lame." But after that, I was kind of like, "Oh, well, it's whatever. It's sparse enough that it doesn't really matter too much." Mm-hmm. And then did I have another gripe besides that? Controls, frame rate. I think that's it. Oh, the upgradable weapons, but yeah, that's about it.
I mean, yeah, that's kind of annoying, but. Yeah. It's not too bad.
Yeah. What are you going to do? Let's talk about the Switch. How do you feel about the Nintendo Switch so far?
I like it. I actually like it a lot.
Wait, haven't you... You've been playing games on the Nintendo Switch.
I have.
Yeah. You should talk about those. You have, like, Puyo Puyo Tetris and stuff.
That is true. Yeah, yeah. I've been playing Puyo Puyo Tetris, which is a... Like, I guess it's, like, not a... It's, like, a fusion game between Tetris and Puyo Puyo, which is the... It's instead of 4 blocks, it's the 2... It's 2 droplets instead. And it was really fun. My girlfriend loves that game, so we were playing that a while. She clapped me. It wasn't even fair. She destroyed me in that game. Like, we played 5 times. She beat me 5 times. No contest at all. So nice. If any people think they're good at Tetris, I know people from the Kinda Funny community think they're pretty good. I'm going to bring my Switch with Puyo Puyo Tetris to Kinda Funny Live, and I'm going to say, "Yo, Joey, you think you're good? All right, challenge my girlfriend. You think you're good? Challenge my girlfriend." She'll rock you. It's not even fair. It wasn't even close. Like, I consider myself pretty good at Tetris, and I was like, at the 4th game, I was like, "All right, I'm gonna try really hard," and I still got my ass beat. Like, clapped, blessing, clapped. LeBron James versus a 10-year-old kid, clapped. That is the comparison. Yeah, it's really fun, and like the controls with the 2 separate Joy-Cons in each hand seemed to work completely fine for me, and it was a good time.
I agree.
Yeah, like. My hands are big, but they're like my fingers are small, so like I don't have a big issue that a lot of people are having with the controller layout. I feel like if you have big hands and big fingers, like if you're Shaq or like if you're like a big dude with big hands, that might be an issue. But like I haven't really had any issues with it in terms of the actual like the ergonomics of the controller. I do have a problem with removing the Joy-Cons because I feel like there isn't a good way to do it without touching your screen.
Oh, yeah, I see. Well, I mean, it's a touchscreen anyway.
No, I know, but like, so, I'm trying to play Zelda and like have it not get smudged or anything. So I'm like trying to remove the Joy-Con like gingerly, and there isn't like a good way to do it. And like when I put it in my dock too, my dock is in a weird place to be fair, but like I also feel like I'm like, like it just seems like I want to keep it nice. So I'm like trying to be as ginger as possible with it. And that's my one complaint. And that and the kickstand are my two complaints, actually.
I feel you. Yeah, the kickstand is kind of lame.
The kickstand is the size of a piece of gum, dude. Like it's so small.
Like, I've not used it once, and I guess I don't really. If I play mostly on my TV. Mm-hmm. Like I play either on my TV or in handheld mode on the bus. And I think more people should try playing this game, playing the Switch on the TV, because I feel like there's something about playing on the TV that like enhances the experience over playing Zelda on the little screen. Because it's my preferred way of playing, unless I'm like out and I have to play on the handheld. But I will never play with that kickstand up, unless it's like some two player game. Unless I'm playing Smash. Mm. Why haven't they announced Smash, man? That's like the biggest.
Because they're dumb.
Because it's Nintendo.
Sigh.
But
long sigh.
No, yeah, the Switch is dope. I've been playing a lot on the bus, and it holds up. Mm. And yeah, I like the. Well, I won't say I like it. The Joy-Con controller is fine. I have a problem with where the D-pad is at. The D-pad is in a whack place, especially like while playing Zelda. You use the D-pad to like switch.
Yeah, it does feel kind of unnatural to switch weapons, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's not even like I'm calling it a D-pad, even though it's not actually a D-pad, but it acts like as a D-pad. It's like there are four different buttons, right? And they're made to like kind of mirror the face buttons. But like if you're gonna switch a weapon, you have to like take your finger,
your thumb off,
of the analog stick, and
like look at
you,
how
you feel
small
like you're
this is.
A great difference. Yeah, it's super. The kickstand is super skinny, and I feel like it's super easy to knock the Switch over, which is why I'm probably never gonna play in kickstand mode.
It feels
the hardware is cool though.
Flimsy. Yeah, no, it does feel good to play. Like I won't disagree with that. Like it's a cool piece of hardware, that's for sure, and I'm enjoying it so far.
Like it blew my mind like randomly on the bus while playing Zelda. I was like, dude, I'm playing like the Skyrim sized game on like the bus on this like tablet looking thing with controllers strapped onto the side. And I'm like, I was like, okay, well, Nintendo did it. They made like a good like solid piece of hardware, and so kudos.
Yeah, like I was on the train the other day, and with my commute, I usually have an hour long train ride. So I'm on this train, and I'm playing Zelda, and I'm like, oh man, I'm just gonna play Zelda, and then I'm gonna listen to a podcast, or I'm gonna study Japanese, and then it's like, bing, you have reached your station. And I'm like, wait, what? I've been playing for an hour. Are you kidding me? Like,
no, that's how I feel.
Time evaporates with this game, and
that's
like
how I feel. I'm like, dude, why can't these bus rides be longer?
Yeah, exactly.
I'm like, driver, just keep driving, dude. I got like another round to go.
Keep going, buddy.
Keep going. Do you have any other games on the Switch?
Besides those two, yeah, it's just Puyo Puyo and Puyo Puyo in that and Zelda. Dude, so,
can we talk about how lame the friends list is though? Like, I've added like five people, and it's like I'm like why do I even have you people added at this point?
Yeah.
Well, I give them the benefit of the doubt because like they don't have their online infrastructure up, and so like technically like. Literally, like, your friends list is just a friends list. Like, you're not doing anything with it. In the even worse thing about it is that they're still doing friend codes, which means that, like, the user IDs had literally no purpose at all. Like, I did my part to cop a user ID as early as possible, and literally it has no use. Unless it's with their online infrastructure, which we'll see. But that stuff kind of seems lame right now. You can see when your friends are playing Zelda, though, which is a plus, but you can't really do much with it.
Yeah.
And so Ian, I'll let you make the choice. Do you want to do the topic of the show, or do you want to skip this episode, because it seems like we're pretty far in?
Yeah,
we can just get into questions if you want.
Yeah, this is a pretty much a Nintendo centric episode, a Zelda centric episode, so let's skip it for today.
Yeah, because the topic of the show is Xbox, but we can talk about that either next week or sometime in the future.
Let's
go to
you heard it first. Fuck Xbox.
You heard it first.
Quote OK Beast.
Yeah, I will not confirm nor deny. I mean, I own an Xbox and I love Xbox, but Xbox has some, it doesn't have issues. It, we can talk about it next week because I have a lot to say about Xbox currently because the I Xbox. Feel like there's a lot to unpack with where Xbox kind of is in the industry right now. I mean, it's not like doing worse than like Nintendo or anything like that, but I think it's in a weird place. But we can talk about that another time. Our first viewer question comes from Pixel Brave. He says, if you could visit each other's city for one day, what would you do or see?
Do you mean like my home city or do you mean Japan?
I think he means Japan.
Yeah, because it's more interesting than New Jersey.
We both live in interesting cities. Because I live in Seattle, you live in Japan.
Yeah, and fun fact, I am going to be visiting your city sometime this year in August. So
yeah, hopefully for PAX.
You will get a chance to show me your city. But if you were in Japan, I would take you to... So what I've done with people that I've visited, I do two things. I take them to a temple, and I take them to get food. Mm-hmm. And then I usually take them to Akihabara. Because the coolest thing about Japan is this dichotomy between old and new. So you have a temple that's like hundreds of years old in the middle of Tokyo, and then you'll go straight from there to get a nice meal, a nice bowl of ramen, and then or like a nice... like meal of sushi, and then from there you'll go from there to the like temple to the food, and then from the food to Akihabara. And if you don't know anything about Japan, Akihabara is like this nerd central where it's an entire part of the city of Tokyo that's dedicated fully to like nerd stuff, like statues and video games and like cafes that are like themed over video games. Like when Persona 5 came out, there was tons of cafes all throughout all across Akihabara, all dedicated to the game because it's like a nerdy part of town. So that's what I would do.
Dude, I need to go to Akihabara so bad.
Come visit, man. I live here. Like I could ease. I can speak Japanese. Money? It's not even that much.
How much would a flight be?
Like how much are you, how much are you paying to fly to California?
For Kinda Funny Live, I'm paying like, I can't remember, like $300.
You can get a flight to Japan for like $500.
For some reason, I don't believe it.
Dude, my flight from Japan to San Francisco and back is $700.
Yeah.
That's not that much more than a fucking flight to California. You can take a bus to California for like a hundo. Like, come on, man.
We'll see. I want to go to Japan someday. And so. Yeah. Maybe eventually. I don't know what I'd take you to do in Seattle because I don't even know what there is for me to do in Seattle.
Yeah.
I've heard about this dope pinball place. If anything, I'll take you here during PAX.
I greatly appreciate the pinball.
If anything, because I'm not a good Seattle light is what they call them. I'm not a good like Seattle.
You're not a good you're not a good satellite?
Seattleite. I don't like go out and I don't see like the big like the poles of Seattle, right? Like mm-hmm. I haven't even gone to the Space Needle. That's how whack I am.
What?
I'd take you to Pike's Place for sure.
What's
Pike's
that?
Place is dope. It's kind of like this kind of it's this market that's like across the I don't want to call it a coast. It's like this fisher market. It's a big deal for some reason. I honestly don't know. I'm going to get beat up. If somebody from Seattle is listening to this podcast, I'm get beat up. Pike's Place is basically like an important like fish market or something.
Jesus downtown. Christ, you know nothing about there's the always, place
there's
you
always,
live in.
There's always a lot of people there. I'll take you to this place called Biscuit Bitch, which is like a good biscuit restaurant. I'll take you to the candy shop. If anything, I'd want you to come here during PAX so that we can like spend the whole time doing nerdy things. And so
I'm down.
That's my answer, is that we do nerdy things at PAX. Next question comes from Ben Bellevue at Mr. Bento Box on Twitter. He asks, with Horizon, Zelda, Mass Effect, and Persona 5, and Nier, how are you managing the onslaught of major games?
I'm not.
I'm not.
I was playing Horizon before, but then there were some things that just bothered me about it. Like these really small, like petty ass things that were bothering me about it. And I feel like I'll get back to that game after I finish this one, but then after Zelda is Persona, after Zelda is Nier. Like, I want to finish these other games as well. So, like, I'll get to Horizon when I get to Horizon, even if that means I, like, boot up the game and just only do story missions, because I feel like that's where that's the most compelling part of that game. Like, the side missions don't really feel super compelling to me. Like, the world feels really, really cool, but the only storyline that seems relevant is the main story. Like, to give context, like, someone's like, oh no, my father's leg is broken, he needs some special flowers, and I'm like, dude, I feel like I'm a conspiracy theorist in that game. And like, someone's like, oh no, my leg is broken, I'm like, don't you know that the machines are alive? Do you know who made them? It was this doctor. And then like and then I'm sitting there like, wait, like, this is not important to me at all. Like, this doesn't, who the fuck cares? And like, maybe that's not the right way to play that game, but like, it just seems like when you find out that, like, when you find out, like, important story elements of the game, like, there's these things that happen where you're like, oh wait, why do I give a fuck about anything else happening in this world? It's like, imagine watching a National Treasure movie and then for 45 minutes they follow a guard at like one of the museums. No, like, oh, like, that's cool. The guard is doing something. Where the fuck is Nick Cage? Like, that's kind of how I feel at a side mission in Horizon. But Nier seems really, really cool, too.
Nier looks dope, and I'm really sad that I'm not going to be able to play Nier until, like, maybe probably, like, the end of the year. I'll play it at the end of the year so I can consider it for Game of the Year. But, like, dude, I do not have the money to buy Nier. Like, because I'm buying games two at a time at this point. Because I got Horizon, and I got Zelda, and I got Switch. Then in a month... In less than a month now, in like a month, comes Persona 5 and Ukulele in like a couple days of each other.
Yeah, I'm not gonna play Ukulele. Maybe I'll be the one covering Nier for us,
and then you'll be covering Nier for us, and I'll be all Ukulele, and then we'll both talk about Persona when I finally get to play that. Actually, are you gonna play Persona in English, or did you play Persona in English already?
No, I played Persona in Japanese. So okay. I didn't beat it though. I only played some of it with my girlfriend. But it's I'm so excited for it. It looks so amazing. So I'm like really hyped for that.
Yeah. And so yeah, we'll both be playing that together. So that'll be like our next Zelda, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
It's hard to manage. And like, the thing is, Prey is coming out, and I'm not gonna get Prey because I don't want to spend the money to get another game.
No. It doesn't seem like our game. Prey,
it seems like my game, to be honest.
Really? It doesn't seem like a game for me.
Because it's in the same vein as like BioShock or Deus Ex.
I didn't know that they were pulling inspiration from those things.
Yeah, it's like a System Shock kind of like successor or successor. They're pulling from the same inspirations, and so it's not like horror like BioShock. I don't think like it's not like that kind of like dark, but it like the gameplay wise, I think that's what it's trying to aim for. And so that's actually a game that I know for a fact that if I played it, I would absolutely love it. But with everything else that's out, like Horizon, Zelda, Persona, Ukulele, Tekken.
Oh, yeah, Tekken's coming out. Yeah. It's been available for like almost a whole year now.
I want to play Tekken so bad, Ian. And it comes out in like June. And I don't know if at that point, I don't know if I'll still be like, I don't know if I'll feel justified because I spent so much money on games this first half of the year that like I'm probably going to be like, I can't do it. But we'll see, because Tekken is so important to me, because Tekken is like one of my favorite fighting games. But yeah, dude, like, I don't know how to answer this question. I don't know how I'm going to find time to manage. And even like Horizon, like if I could go back in time, I'd probably like change time so that I didn't buy Horizon and instead use that money to buy Tekken later on.
Interesting. Because,
like,
okay.
After playing Horizon, like I described Horizon last week as like the game that I imagined next gen games to be, and it is. Mm-hmm. It's everything I could want and expect, and it's amazing. It's like it's up there. It's excellent to me. That being said, I kind of don't care about Horizon, especially after playing Zelda. I kind of just don't care about Horizon anymore, which is sad for me to say because it's an excellent game, like excellently designed, cool. Has like all the things going for it, but I kind of just, and I might care later, maybe after I beat Zelda, maybe if I come back to Horizon in the summer, I'll like get pulled by it and I'll care a lot about it. But right now I'm just kind of like, everything in this game is cool, and I not only respect this game, but I appreciate it for existing, but at the same time, after playing Zelda, I kind of only care about Zelda right now. And then when Persona 5 comes out, I'm only going to care about Persona 5. Then when Tekken comes out, I know for a fact I'm going to care about Tekken because I love Tekken. But also, I don't know if I'm going to buy Tekken, but I wish... I'm probably going to buy Tekken because I'm irresponsible.
Mm.
And then Mario Odyssey comes out, but that's later on. And so, yeah, it's a whole thing. Our next question, and I'm going to make this our last question. Actually, okay, so Paul Warren has a few questions. I'm going to ask all of them just because they seem relevant to this episode. His first question is, do you think you'll end up spending more time on Zelda Breath of the Wild or on Persona 5? He says, I also heard that Persona 5 has kanji lessons. Wonder if that will stay in the English localizations.
Oh, shit, really?
Do you have any... Yeah, I didn't know this either. And it's super relevant to, this whole episode.
Yeah, it really is, actually. yeah, no, like, I haven't seen anything about that, but maybe? I'm not sure.
Yeah, I wouldn't be able to speak on it.
If and when that happens, Paul, if you're listening, if and when that happens, I'll let you know. And I'll let you know what the kanji means. But as of right now, I have not gotten to that area. That's really fucking cool.
Yeah. That'd be really cool if they kept it and, like, they taught, like... In the English version, they taught actual kanji lessons. As far as which all, I think I'll end up spending more time with, I think Persona 5 is technically longer than Zelda.
And yeah, so much longer. End up much spending longer.
More time. Yeah, like Zelda is like, what, 40 hours, 100 hours if you want to do like literally everything.
Mm.
Persona 5 is probably going to be like
100 hours, hours if you want to finish the story. Yeah, bare minimum. Exactly. Yeah,
bare minimum. Yeah, exactly. And so... that being the case, I'll probably spend more time with Persona 5, but I could see myself completing, like, I could see myself playing Zelda beyond finishing the story, and so I might play a lot of Zelda, but...
Mm. Just because of the portability factor, yeah. Like, that I can just play it on the train, yeah. Even if I just beat it, I'm like, oh, there's more shit to do, cool, I'll do that. But in terms of the kanji stuff, Paul, if you know where that is, hit us up on Twitter and let us know at OKBeastNow, because I would love to have that and kind of like use that and give you some feedback on that stuff as well.
Paul also comments quite a bit on OKBeast.com. And so if you want to elaborate more on it too, like feel free to do that on OKBeast.com and I'll relay it. But final question also comes from Paul Warren. He says, thoughts on Iron Fist getting pretty bad reviews. This I actually didn't know. I'm going to look it up.
Actually, I can already tell you, it's gotten mixed reviews for the first 6 episodes from IGN and from a bunch of other places saying that they're kind of slow and kind of similar to a soap opera.
It has 9% on Rotten Tomatoes.
It's not even out yet. Who's... You can't get 9% on Rotten Tomatoes without seeing the whole thing, you fucking liars.
That's hilarious. My thoughts on it is that, like, I do feel like the Marvel shows have been kind of getting a little bit worse and worse.
Really?
I kind of do. Like, and maybe it was just like the second half of Luke Cage that did it to me. It could have been like the last episode of Luke Cage that did it to me, because the last episode was super whack. But like, I still love them because I still think they're doing things better than other superhero shows.
Mm.
But I like the first season of Daredevil, absolutely loved. First season of Jessica Jones, I absolutely loved. Luke Cage, I was like, I love this, but I don't know if I love it as much as I love the other stuff. Second season of Daredevil, first 4 episodes, I absolutely loved. But then the rest of it, I was like, this is cool. Like, there was a certain point where I was like, this is kind of getting... I feel like they're kind of getting repetitive a bit with, like, how they're approaching telling their stories. Luke Cage did a cool thing because how I approached culture and black culture and portraying that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. There's something about it that doesn't feel special anymore. And I think that's what it is for me, where I'm like, when Iron Fist comes out, I'm probably not going to binge watch it. Whereas, like, when Daredevil originally came out, binge watched it. Jessica Jones binge watched it. Luke Cage, same thing. Luke Cage season 2, watched the first 4 episodes, and I was like, this is great. Then, like, I kind of kept watching, and I was like, tempered off a bit. Iron Fist is going to come out, and I'm probably going to be like, yeah, I'm going to watch this. I'm probably going to take my time with it because I'm kind of not as invested as I was before, at least for me. And so, I don't know. Do you have any other opinions on it?
I mean, I love Iron Fist. Like, I played him in Ultimate Marvel. So, I don't know. I'm excited to see how it goes. But I mean, who knows? Maybe at the end of the day, the story is not as good as the other properties. I had a really good time with Luke Cage, so.
Yeah, maybe they should have made him Asian. Maybe that would have made me like it. No, I'm just kidding. For those listening, once again, thank you so much for listening to the OKB's podcast. Remember, you can find me on Twitter at Blessing Jr. You can find Ian on Twitter at Ian Why Not. For the second time, remember that the OKB's podcast is a gaming and nerd culture-centric show where a couple of friends come together and talk about what's going on in our world. We are the official podcast of OKBeast.com. If you like the show, remember to subscribe to us on your streaming service of choice. Visit OKBeast.com and follow at OKBeast now on Twitter. That has been Ian Preschel. I have been Blessing. I'm sorry that I've been sick and kind of low energy this episode, but next episode, both of us will be back with blackjack and hookers. I don't know. Say bye, Ian.
Bye, Ian. Blackjack and hookers, huh? That's what you went with?